Welcome to the Guardian Mindset Podcast, presented by attorney Eric Daigle.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the next episode of a podcast, Guardian Mindset. And today is actually a very enjoyable day for me. I'm here at the FBI LEADA 2024 Executive Leadership Conference, where I've had a wonderful opportunity to speak. And during, we meet all sorts of characters that just happen to become part of our big LEADA family. And I couldn't let this one get on a plane today without actually trying to lock him in, because he's very popular, as you can imagine. So I'd like to welcome Greg Jabbar to the Guardian Mindset Podcast. How are you, Greg?
Eric. Wait, this might be the first time that we've ever actually held space just the two of us, like,
yeah,
without
usually running crazy. And hi, Greg. So listen, I've known you for years here at FBI LEADA, interacting. And watched you, you know, it's always, you know, I fangirl you a little bit, you know,
and I, you and your wife.
And so the point, we like watching, you know, you on Blue Bloods. And then this year I'm sitting there, you know, this big movie that's going to come out and give Barbie a challenge. And here's Oppenheimer. And who do I see up on stage playing a serious role but Greg?
Clearly you didn't have to go up and pee during my brief scenes as they appeared in the film. That was a long 3 hours, but worth it, right?
Oh, it was very, very good movie.
Yeah, good movie. I still don't consider myself a cast member of that film. I'm literally
a lot of them, weren't
they? Yeah, I'm like the only actor I don't recognize on that call sheet, on that cast list. Yeah.
All right, let's go back. Let's talk a little bit about your history, because what the podcasters are probably trying to figure out is, what the hell's Greg Jabbar doing at the FBI LEADA conference?
Yeah, sure.
All right, so just give me a little background. Tell our listeners a little bit about you.
So, do you remember how many years was Memphis? Because that was my first year.
I want to say it was 6 years.
6 years ago.
So. Before COVID, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like so, 17, 18.
Judy Powell, who then was part of this organization,
yep,
had decided, let's do a panel to discuss PR, the real problem with public relations with law enforcement. And they had Jim O'Neill, then chief of department from NYPD,
yep.
And one of his DCPIs. And then they had Jim Nuciforo, who's our show tech on Blue Bloods.
Yep.
He asked me if I wanted to come, since I play the DCPI on the show. And I can remember saying to him and to Judy Powell, wait, you're going to do a real panel to really seriously discuss the issues about PR for law enforcement. I go, you do realize I'm a faker. I only play a guy who's a DCPI. It's not really like somebody else writes the ideas that come out of my head. And I realized, oh, okay, I'll just be there and be the, you know, the fart and laugh guy. But and not knowing what I was getting into, but excited for the opportunity and to go to Memphis. And it was my first time being exposed to the FBI LEADA organization. And when that conversation, when that panel ended, and it was a lot of fun. And I also realized why Jim O'Neill became commissioner, because that guy, he laid waste to me in the humor department. I thought I was going to be the funny guy. And so not only is he charismatic, but also very, very funny and a sweetheart. But at the end of the panel, he had remarked to me in Nuciforo, he goes, yeah, so here I am, you know, chief NYPD, I thought there would be a few people who'd want to say hi, and we're done, and we're there to say hello. And he goes, I have like two or three people in line to say hi to me. And he goes, there's a line around the ballroom to meet the guy that's on television. And he goes, it was a real eye-opening experience. And for me, it was as well, because I had never realized how important it was for all of you who do the real deal.
Yeah.
It'll keep us all safe, that just my being there, like, just meant something on
supported.
The simplest level.
Yeah.
And that's what I didn't know. And I always tell my wife, that was the day that I found the calling, which was, I can come and remind you guys how vital you are.
Yeah.
When the world isn't doing it.
Right.
When society, even our own communities, are struggling to be the support that law enforcement needs.
Right.
And all I have to do is be here. And you have to know that shooting Blue Bloods, it's 8 months out of the year. I live in L.A. We film in New York. I commute. I'm away from home a lot. Our two sons, my wife. So the 3 months that I'm not filming, and it's been 14 years now, gratefully, those 3 months I don't work, that's sacred time. I'm home. I'm stay-at-home dad. My wife sleeps in. I get the kids to school.
Yep.
I do the cooking. I'm home. And I don't do anything else. But when I came home from that first conference from Memphis, my wife said, she goes, this affected you in a way that I've never seen before. I go, yeah, I realized this dumb actor who just happens to be in a cop show, it means something to the people that we need to have there taking care of us.
I mean, you leaned into it too. I mean, you made your own challenge coins. You're interacting.
And that was because of this.
Yeah,
because you
leaned into this.
Yeah, you know, I have my little cheapo business card with the Blue Bloods logo on it.
Right.
And I'm getting all these amazing coins and I'm going, oh, I have to step up my game.
Yeah, and you did.
And it really was just for here so that I could match you guys, at least try halfway, you know?
Well, I got humbled last year because I didn't win. I kind of stole the clicker from... I appropriated it because nobody else came to collect it, if you remember, at the end.
Oh, no.
You autographed the 150th episode or whatever.
Right, clicker, that clapboard, yeah.
The clapboard, and I have that in my office, and I truly love it, and my assistant, Jen, is a huge fan, and she, and every day, I'm like, don't touch my clapboard.
No, and that is, that's a, I mean... Unless you're on the show, you don't have one of those.
So tell everybody, just because one of the things we find is that the younger ones, you know, they don't watch a lot of TV.
No.
So they're like, hey, who's this guy? The old guys, we're fangirling you because we're watching Blue Bloods.
Well, it's really Selleck's mustache.
Yeah, Selleck's. Well, everybody wants a mustache like that.
Yeah, sure.
So what part do you play on Blue Bloods?
So Blue Bloods is a story about three or four generations of law enforcement officers in the NYPD.
Right.
And it stars Tom Selleck, Len Carreyrou, Donnie Wahlberg, Bridget Moynihan, Will Estes. It's a beautiful show that I just happened to get hired on toward the end of season one. Tom Selleck and I have known each other since a comedy film that we did called In and Out.
Okay, yeah.
30 years ago. And, you know, in my business, and like any industry, I think you have a great experience with somebody, but it's a short-lived thing. At the end, everybody goes, oh, man, this was great. We'll definitely do something again. And as an actor, a director, a producer, they all say that, especially if it's a positive.
Right.
But out of sight, out of mind, right?
Right.
But Selleck and I were both actors on this film. But he came to me and he goes, you're funny. I have a production company. We're definitely going to work together. And I'm going, as an actor, as a young actor who's, you know, just got validated by Magnum PI.
Right.
Okay, I'm good.
Who doesn't want that?
Yeah, I said, you know, just that moment, that generous offering, I know it'll never come to fruition. Blue Bloods is the third TV job that Tom Selleck has given me.
Wow.
We've done two other, a single camera comedy. We did a multi-camera sitcom that never went past a pilot. But Blue Bloods, when I was... a Broadway stage actor. I was enjoying a long run in Billy Elliot. I just won the Tony Award.
Yep.
And I was a big deal in the musical theater world. And they announced that Tom Selleck's new cop show is going to come to New York City. And I'm thinking, I call my agents. I go, Selleck's coming with a job. I'll get at least a guest part or something on
the
show.
Right.
Make sure you get to the casting people. Get me submitted. And I went in for three different episodes, three different characters, and nothing. Never got a hit. Now, Tom was never in the room.
Right.
Like he actually was for those other two jobs that he had given me previously. And I thought, oh, the honeymoon's over.
Yeah.
It's not going on. But end of the first season, my agents called. They said, so they're going to introduce this character. It's only a two-episode arc, end of season one. But Tom Selleck apparently wants you to do it. And I went, I heard Choirs of Angels.
Yeah,
I went,
thank God. The bromance is back. He still loves me.
Yeah. So that's how I ended up playing this character that in a world that, you know, I'm not from a family of law enforcement.
Yep.
So it, for me, it was just an acting job, but it's turned into this journey that I'm on, especially supporting law enforcement, that I never could have known.
And you're actually even promoting up through and you're acting like a law enforcement officer as you're going, as the program was going through, right? From your initial job to what you have now on Blue Bloods. Right now, you're over IA now, right? Or what is the current character you're playing?
Well, it's still the same DCPI. Like, he's always been the same guy.
Okay.
But definitely, and especially because, you know, people, everybody in the job will call our tech, Jim Nusaforo,
yep,
and go, okay, that was BS. That would never happen. Or, you know, so the reason my character was introduced was because you need to have that guy to discuss those issues with the commissioner. I mean, I'm gratefully one of the few characters that get to give, you know, the commissioner what for, right? I get to call him out. I get to be the devil's advocate. I get to be the social conscience or whatever. And the character always gets busted for not being a cop. Like, you know, always say, you can't understand.
Yeah.
You never really served. And it's a nice little sort of...
Well, that's always an industry issue, but I do believe that, that your character having watched you participate in FBI Leaders Conference, and you, I even see you in training classes. Like, you know, like the fact that you're doing that is, you know, it's a skill, it's an art, and you're studying your art to the point where the more of us you meet, the more you interact with, the more you speak like us, the more you act like us. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, we haven't figured out yet. But
no, but you're absolutely right. Right. This was as an actor, right, who takes his work seriously, this was like a gift that I'm suddenly being welcomed into your world here, because I get to learn more about what it is I'm trying to honor and celebrate and tell stories about on television.
But there's also another side of this, which is what we can learn from you. And it's not a one-way street, because our struggles in law enforcement, and you've seen, even being with Leda, you know, reform is nothing new. Use of force is nothing new. It's things that I talk about on this podcast all the time. It's our brand new officers, and even our current officers, they're working with fear today, right? And they're working with fear. I mean, listen, you know, one of the things that you know when you take your job is that the chances of you going to prison for doing your job or is none, right?
Right.
Because you really got to mess up.
Although now that HR is involved on the corporate level, it's a very different dynamic. Yeah.
And so,
but you're absolutely right.
And so the issue that we have, Aaron, and we call it a little bit of a thing like dancing with fear, right? Those of us that do this job, we value the community engagement. But what we need from people like you is, as we teach you about the job, which you've accepted, we also could learn more about what society wants to know about the job, how we can bridge that gap. Because I'll tell you, for decades, we've been studying this community relations application, right?
Sure.
And nobody has the answer, because everybody has different biases, everybody has different life experiences. And the challenge that we look for is, you know, it's almost like you put the uniform on, and unless you're a people person, like you probably figured out, I'm a people person, so I like to talk to people. But the fear is real now with the younger officers, that they're not as inserting themselves into the community. And I think what we can learn from you a lot is, from your perspective, as you watched us go through the last decade, right, from the shooting death of Michael Brown through the tragedy with George Floyd and officers getting arrested, what was an interesting perspective that you took now, knowing the people that do the job, but also as a citizen who's living without being in law enforcement and now playing a law enforcement role?
Right. You know, I'll share an experience that I had. I was driving the car through Santa Monica, and I'm coming up on a hill, and I saw there's a radio car coming. And the backstory is, the Santa Monica police saved my kid's life when he was really little. He swallowed, choked on a water bottle cap.
That's awesome.
And I'm out on the field redressing the outfield fence, and all these vehicles started rushing on this park where the Pony League plays. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, something big's happening here. And I saw cops jump out of cars and leave the doors open and run full out. I'm going, something big's happening. And my little kid comes, my oldest son, who's, you know, an early teenager at the time, comes through the field to get me and goes, Dad, don't be mad. I'm afraid you're going to be mad because I have bad news. But Aiden is choking on a water bottle cap. And I'm thinking, oh, that's not what you want to hear. But
no.
But what I witnessed that day was there's our law enforcement who literally showed up. Like, every priority was to make sure that kid didn't die, and it was my kid. And so with that information, I hold all law enforcement, but Santa Monica police saved my kid's life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm driving in the car the years later, and I see a Santa Monica radio car, and I'm looking because I want to acknowledge them, right? To go, hey, hi, wave, hi, right? I blew through a red stop sign, not knowing, because I was so busy.
Yeah, I was about to violate the law.
Because I'm going to be, just let those guys know how important they are. Well, oblivious, and they're looking at me, and I kept going. And then suddenly, lights come up, and they pulled up right next to me, and they said, so, and what was interesting to witness, to support what you're saying, there was a guard up. There was, not knowing what they might have come from earlier that day or dealt with,
right?
But they came up to me with the shield up, emotionally going, so yeah, what were you doing? You know, you just blew us through a stop sign. And I'm going, and I'm thinking it's going to be, hey, I love you guys, and maybe they'll recognize me on the show, it'll be a mutual thing. Like,
yeah.
And it wasn't, because I was an idiot trying to do the right thing, but I wasn't. And they came in and the tone was like, they were really handing me like they would anybody. Are you going to be drunk? Are you going to be confrontational? Are like, that's the reality. And I'm a, you know, I'm a well-dressed guy in a nice car. And yet I don't know what they're bringing to that moment.
Right.
And the sad thing was that I came away from that moment when they went, they go, yeah, you did. And the one, the ride along, the right seat, he goes, how many fingers do I have up? And I said, and I'm going, two. And I was completely respectful, but I'm humiliated slightly. And I think that was kind of what they were doing because they wanted to make sure that I wasn't drinking. But yep. Also, but he goes, oh, good. Then you're not blind. So you know, they're checking the boxes of all the reasons.
Sarcasm, come on.
Yeah, big time. And it really was like, oh man, I was hoping this was going to be a hey man, I love you too moment. And it ended up being just stumbled into, but what it underlines is that, and these are guys who are in their, I'd say late 40s, early 50s on the job. And even dealing with me, you know, it's not like they're in a rough, dark neighborhood where they you think that's where they got to be on. It was like, oh, that's, that it was a sobering moment to go just to handle me. That's taking their lives in their own line,
right?
You know, taking a step into potential danger. And it was just a sobering reality to what our cops are, you know, asked to do every single day.
So let's now playing the role. I mean, having sets and doing all this stuff and interacting.
Sure,
you know. As we talked about, the challenge is policing with, we call it policing with the community,
right?
I mean, one thing, this podcast was built off of principles of Sir Robert Peel, who was the father of modern day law enforcement, who said, police are the public and the public are the police, right? Like we can't do this without each other. We have to form that entity. And so from your perspective, have you formed any opinions from using your multifaceted observation platform, there's that's fancy words, right?
Yeah, I'm really impressed with her.
Yeah, there you go. on how officers, what the community needs, and how better to work with the community.
So maybe my opinion, it's a little slanted because I am in the middle of what you guys were. I mean, that's what you guys do here at FBI LEADA,
right?
Is address all those issues,
right? Right.
So I'm hearing all the new terminology, all the consciousness, how different departments have different names and labels for the process that they use to try and achieve the same thing.
Yep.
But like for us on the show, and I can't take credit for this because it's the writers who do all the research and make an effort to, like, when we're dealing with an issue such as this or you know, when there is failure between the community and law enforcement, the issue comes up, and the show tries to not preach one way or the other, but it's an opportunity to go, here's a problem, and we need to find a way to fix it. And there's always a solution in that equation, but there's also a voice to the people who may not be able are beating their head or running into that wall or can't see past whatever.
I mean, the show does a great job of following realistic issues that law enforcement is addressing.
Right.
And from, I mean, look, they are what they are. Race relations, interaction, perceived aggression, things that, and really a lot of it comes down to, in my years of doing this, is I think in the world we've lost respect, right?
Completely.
It's really just about respect. You know, my job may be X, your job may be Y. It doesn't matter how we interact, but we got to do it in a manner in which you respect me, I respect you, and we come to a resolution. I think that's what I really like about the show.
When I was a kid, growing up in Westland, Michigan, it was, well, what I miss, and although I do still see it in some youth, but not as much, especially not in New York or Los Angeles. But when I grew up in suburban Detroit, you saw a cop, they're a hero. Mm-hmm. You saw a fireman, you know, these people, they're there to protect you. They're a hero. There was astronauts. Cops and firemen. Those were the rock stars when I was growing up. And it wasn't because it was a part of my world. I didn't have family who did it. That's just a respect and admiration you had because you knew they were doing something important. But you're a child. And then as you grow up, What are your life experiences? I mean, if I end
hopefully up... Hopefully you had a good interaction with them at some point that helped build that
exactly.
experience.
But then you have a negative interaction, and then you go, oh, I see why somebody would, you know, a cop goes into a restaurant. They have to go, they have to actually watch the food being prepared because they don't know that they didn't put whoever's in the kitchen in the slammer and they same saw him come in, they're going to spit on their plate. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, and that's the wrong reality that our cops are faced with today. And it didn't exist when I was a kid.
And you having a big platform on media and social media and doing a lot of these, right?
Right.
I mean, this is where we value you is because, you know, you've seen me, when we give speeches and we give talks, well, we're cops protecting cops. And really, we're not. You know, anyone that knows most of us that are here, we'll call good, good, bad, bad. It is
oh, right.
It is,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
But the social media world is a whole nother world. And,
yeah.
And what is your opinion on the manner and the type of scrutiny that police receive on social media? And what could we do to make that better? How do we get that? Because that's a real, social media is now.
It's a beast.
And you get it, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. If we had that answer, we wouldn't have to be discussing it as a problem.
Yeah.
What I can tell you we do on the show, when a script comes out and we all read it, there's an opportunity and I see this more in Tom Selleck than anybody else, but the story gets tweaked because he's going, this isn't beneficial for what our job that we really see on the show. We're trying to actually help heal that disparity
right.
between society and law enforcement. And our writers do it, you know, first and foremost. But there are some nuances in things that are said. And I witnessed Tom go, I think I need to say it this way because it could be misconstrued. We know what we're trying to say. But he goes, I think we need to say it because we don't want to promote anything that dissents, you know, law enforcement or puts that character in a bad light. I mean, yeah, there are bad players and everything.
Yep.
But we actually do the work on the show so that we are supporting positive movement in our viewership and their understanding of what you guys do, as opposed to sensationalizing the dark side
of
the reality of law enforcement.
Right.
You know, that's just the hard part of any career, all humanity. There's more good than there is bad, and unfortunately, the social media is looking for clicks.
It exemplifies the bad.
Yeah, it's like,
I joke because I say to the officers, you know, in the recruit academy and stuff, like, listen, you know, TikTok is not a news forum.
No.
Instagram is not a news forum. And while news has its own issues.
Yeah, our news shows, they're highly biased.
Yeah, so, but this is where... knowing that our younger officers are now getting their feeling of respect and pride off of the internet, and I look at them and say, I don't know that you're ever going to get it there, because the quiet people of the country that are supporting you
they're not even on social media.
Yeah,
right. They're the people who are you know, pressing flesh and talking,
right,
and involved, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And I say to the officers, like, you know, you got to get out of the car and meet people. It's a wonderful job in the aspect of meeting people. You meet amazing people. You meet a lot of people that you don't want to meet again, but you meet people in the worst and most crisis-filled time of their life. Like, I assume, you know, after the incident with your son, you're very thankful how you reacted to those officers validated the fact that this is what I want to do for a living. This is what I want.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Those are the good days. Those are the great days.
And, you know, I can remember New York City right after 9/11.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a cost that nobody should ever had to pay. But what changed was the way society looked at our cops and our firemen for quite a long time.
Right.
Because they realized what they do,
right,
and the sacrifice that it was, and it was so much. It was so nice. Tourists in New York City, all they wanted to do was be photographed with cops and firemen.
That's
EMS. That's all they wanted to do. Because
it's amazing how fast it switches back and forth, though.
It's tragic is what it is. But it's also, no, I don't know that that positiveness is cyclical. But what I do know is cyclical are the dilemmas that law enforcement has to run.
Yeah, they're not going to stop.
And people go, wait, that episode just aired last night and it just happened this week in this town, right? It, you know, made all the headlines. And we go, the sad thing is that show was written a year ago and we shot it 6 months ago and it was scheduled at CBS long before the air date. And the sad thing is that problem recurs and it just happened to happen again when that show aired and it looks like, you know, we're pulling from the headlines or...
Looks like you're plugged in.
Yeah, but in fact, the sad story is the same problems keep occurring.
You know, the funny question I wanted to ask you is this, is because you're taping in New York and you're interacting, what's your interaction like with NYPD?
Oh, it's like being with you guys.
Yeah.
You know, it's really nice. Yeah, everywhere you go. And it's not like those two guys in the radio car who looking at me like, hey, asshole, you just ran a stop sign. It's like, you know, the first they clock you and then the light goes on because they all lead with, you know, their protocol, right? They're looking at everybody because they saw their, what's the name for it? At you know, at morning call, they see a list of who they're...
Yeah, a roll call.
What's it called? It's called the man, not something finest, like when they...
It's on the hot list.
List. Yeah. I mean, we have a term we use in the show, and here I am not remembering, because I don't play a cop on this, which I'm constantly reminded. But it is. I get to see those officers go from business eyes to, you're not on the FBI list. DC. And they go, DCPI.
All right, listen, I got to ask, because I teach for a living.
Sure.
I do a lot of, how do you remember all that crap? How do you remember your what do they call them?
My line.
How do you remember all that?
So
like, how much that's got to be crazy.
I'm going to try and make this a short story. As a Broadway actor, when you start a show, you have 3 months to rehearse with a lot of other people and a lot of trial and error to find your lines and be ready to do a show the same way 8 times a week. But you have 3 months to learn that stuff. Yeah. On Blue Bloods, I showed up my first night, the first episode that I was on, I stayed up all night till I had all my lines down, right? And then I showed up that next morning. It's the first time I've seen Selleck in maybe 2 years in person. Big hugs. And then he pulls out his legal pad and he's got pages of notes for the writers and the producers on the scene we're about to shoot because he wants to change everything. Now, I've stayed up all night memorizing my lines and I'm going, oh no. And what I learned was, okay, no more memorizing lines the night before because everything's going to change. And it does that overnight. They're doing rewrites. And then Tom, because he's so busy on the show, never gets to give his notes until we sit down for the first time to read, rehearse, and then shoot a scene.
Well, that's a skill set.
And I learned, and it wasn't a muscle that I had before, but I read the whole script so I know we're expected. I don't worry about my words until we actually start rehearsal. And it'll be me, Bob Klohessy, who plays Gormley, Abby, who plays Baker, Tom and myself, traditionally in that commissioner's office. We'll read through the scene. It could be 5 pages of dialogue. And often, because Tom is now a big star and he's older and he doesn't want to have to memorize all the shoe leather that you need to bring an audience up to speed.
He says yes.
Right, exactly. And that's why now we're all there because we do all the heavy lifting. We're doing the paragraphs of, exposition to get the story started. But now I'll read it for the first time, all the real words. We'll put it on its feet. We'll run it maybe 3 times. And then we walk away from the set to get into our costume while the crew lights it for whatever we're going to shoot first. And we always shoot Tom's close-ups first.
Right.
So I know that.
And so you're shooting it out of order too?
No, we shoot it. Okay. We shoot it, but we're always going to shoot his coverage. So the camera's going to be behind us in the chair shooting at his desk. So that means I've had those 5 rehearsals reading it with everybody then. Now I have 45 minutes where I'm putting on my costume. I go and I can memorize 5 pages of dialogue in 30 to 45 minutes without a problem. And then we shoot all of his coverage so I can miss a word or two while we're shooting his stuff, close-ups, so that by the time, which is another 30 to 40 minutes later, we turn around on us, I've rehearsed it with everybody in the room.
It's a skill set.
But I did not have that muscle before doing this job.
Well, that's a skill set. All right. Well, I know you got to catch a plane, but I do want to do this. I'm going to put you on the spot.
Oh, great.
DLG hosts a very large conference in Connecticut in the first week of December. It's called the Use of Force Summit. 1,000 or plus law enforcement from all over the country come in Mohegan Sun. I know you're close. If I can get you there in one of those 3 days, you have an invite, an open invite, if you can fit it. Because just as you're appreciated here, these individuals are a little different because we have both command. There's a lot of command here. I got a lot of DT instructors, a lot of the firearms instructors, a lot of the guys that are there that really want to learn and really there. And because it's East Coast and at Mohegan, and it might be an easier jump over at some point
after December.
It's right after Thanksgiving, but I want to offer and extend an invite to you. Bring your coins and come feel some more love from the law enforcement community. If you can make it, we'd love to have you.
Well, thank you. As you know, I didn't know I was going to be here until Wednesday because we're shooting right now.
Yep.
So it'll come down to that kind of a, so it'll be a last minute thing. But no, if I'm not being paid to pretend that I'm one of you, I will be there to remind all of you how vital.
All right. Last question on the way out.
All right.
If you're having a cup of coffee and a new officer all shiny comes up to you and recognizes you and just wants to bend your ear for a second, and he's asking you for some life philosophical advice, what would you give him?
Well, first of all, I thank him right out of the gate for what he does. And I say to him, even though you don't get this every day, everyone in their heart knows that we need you here doing what you do. So even during the tough days, know that what you do is important and that everyone in their heart knows that we need you. And even though not everyone knows how to say it, let me today, and hopefully it'll carry you for a few moments and the next hard thing, thank you. And you're vital. And please, as long as you in your soul appreciate how valuable you are, I'm grateful that you stay the course.
Well, on behalf of the law enforcement community and the honor I've been given just knowing you for years, I thank you for the support you do give us. And it really, really, really does mean a lot. And
well,
I appreciate it. Thanks for, I know you're running. Thanks for giving me a little bit of time here so I can put you out to the listeners. But we put actors as you can't, they're in just another world. But one of the things that's so amazing about you is that we've broken bread together. We've had cocktails together. And you really leaned into your relationship with us, and we appreciate that.
Well, I feel the same about you and everybody here, so thanks.
Well, thank you. So everybody, we thank you for participating and listening to this wonderful podcast. Now, listen, you heard Greg's coming to Use of Force Summit, so you better be there. There you go.
Yeah, just make sure you text me, though.
I will. And let's end as we always do. Help those who need your help. Protect those who need your protection. And most importantly, keep yourself and others safe. Thank you. Be well. The Guardian Mindset Podcast is sponsored by the DLG Learning Center. You can find us at www.dlglearningcenter.com. On the Learning Center, you can find an extensive library of articles, webinars, and online training. Listen, if you find the podcast informative, I'd recommend checking out our weekly Path of the Guardian video training and our monthly supervisory continued education program. These programs can be purchased by single users or department-wide. And if you want easy access to articles and information, please download the Daigle Law Group app through either your Apple App Store or your Google App Store. And remember, help those who need your help, protect those who need your protection, and most importantly, keep yourself and others safe. Thank you.